Good morning. We're bringing in the other states, so it's pretty useful to start on time. So I could introduce myself, but I have no funny anecdotes. I'm a pretty boring individual, and I don't look forward to meeting myself at conferences, so I've got none of that. Welcome states, welcome friends, welcome my leaders. We are going to try something a little bit different today. We're going to try something actually, for me, very different today. When Ann Craig introduces the program to many people and introduces it here in Illinois, she is quick to say that there is no failure, that you can't fail, that you can try, and ultimately the process is what you get out of it. I am going to do my best to prove her wrong today with this presentation by failing miserably. So what I would like to do is, rather than, you know, what I'm normally used to do is, you know, I put together keynote slides and I make them pretty, and the idea is that, you know, even if I can't say anything intelligent, I can entertain you with pretty pictures. And today we're going, acoustic. If you ever have a chance, Eric Idle, if you know who Eric Idle is, of Monty Python fame and Spamalot, wrote a fabulous book. It's called The Greedy Bastard Diary, or Greedy Bastard Tour Diary. And he tells the story of when he used to go out and do comedy shows and such, they have to bring the sets and the dancers and the extras and the orchestras, and it's a big production. And what he wanted to, he went to a tour producer and he said, okay, I want to just, it's just me and like three friends, and we get on a bus and we go do this. And the tour producer said, oh, you want a Greedy Bastard tour? And he said, what does he mean? He goes, well, you know, when musicians like get to a certain age, they just like show up with the acoustics so they don't have to pay for the set and the extra and the actors, and so they just go rake in as much money as they can. It's the Greedy Bastard Tour. So this is my Greedy Bastard Tour. We're gonna go acoustic on you today. And what we're going to try is a lot of interactivity, and we're going to try doing that through Twitter. So I'm gonna call out some questions, and I'm going to ask for you the input. I'm gonna ask for groups to get together. So within the states, this is not gonna be just a sitting and watching a screen. I'm gonna ask you to do things. And I'm gonna then ask you to use Twitter to respond, all right? So rather than the old debrief back and forth, we're gonna do it this way. The way we need to do this, and this is the first point of failure, is on Twitter, if you tweet using the hashtag AskVRD, Ask Virtual Dave, there's a long story behind it, it will pop up on this screen, all right? So that, yes, that is the first thing, is that I am trusting my community in a conversation to not abuse it, and watch out that doesn't work. So, the Greedy Bastard Tour has begun. All right, so what I'm gonna do before we even get into it is, I started, before I even showed up and asked and said, what would you like me to talk about? And I got four folks who said, you know, we have a couple of issues we'd like you to talk about. Maine State Library, thank you Mainers, wrote that, how about addressing the all things to all people conundrum? Yes, it is. Right? And so we're going to talk about that. That comes up a lot when we talk about community engagement and what projects we can work on and how we can do it. What is the difference between that and a community center? And then I got another tweet that said something to the effect of how librarians relate to informal education and relevance. I thought, all right, that's an interesting thing to talk about. I got another tweet that said, how to increase public awareness of the vital importance of employing more librarians instead of only employing more paraprofessionals. Mm-hmm. And the last one I got was, how do we motivate our colleagues and management to take on new projects like the ones we're coming up with in iLead USA team? Hi. All right. So that actually, as I looked at it, I was thinking, oh, how am I going to get those topics, and am I just going to do it as a Q&A period? I said, actually, that forms a pretty interesting outline, right? How do we do, you know, how do we solve the all things to all people problems? How does it do informal learning? What's the role of librarians in that? And then how do we implement that change? So that's the theme through today. And what I'm going to say is most of it is changing our mental models. When we and the communities we work with and the paraprofessionals and the library administrators and library school, we've set up a way of thinking about libraries that gets in the way of solving some of those problems. So I want to start with an example, and here it is. Several years ago, OCLC did something called the environmental scan, and they went and looked and said, this is how the world is and what's happening. And one of the things they asked as the survey was, what one word do you associate with libraries? And they said, books. So this is really interesting, right? Because, oh, clearly what that means is they have a traditional view and all they want are books and bookshelves, and so it's all about books, and so all this community stuff where we're gonna, like, why are we bothering preparing people for autism? What's this hotspot thing? Why would we do this? Because all they want are books. First activity, what I would like you to do, those of you Twitter folks, is I would like you to give me one word that you associate with books. La, la, la. So tweet out using the AskVRD tag. All right, there we go. We got one. See, this is the problem with these Twitter walls is how fast they refresh. Moldy, bed bugs, learning. Right? Couple more as they come in. Knowledge, pleasure, dust, right? So my point of this is when you ask the question, you kind of get the response you want. But how you interpret those responses are very different. When people said books, did they mean imagination? Did they mean passion? Did they mean escape? Did they mean love? That word, that term has so much around it that to collapse it into one word, we reach for something that's immediate and obvious. And actually, it is us that probably read into that one way that wasn't necessarily intended when our communities used it. We interpreted it as things and activities and what we did in the past and tradition. But that's not necessarily what people associated with that word. So we need to begin to change our mental models and how we think of libraries. Now, libraries have been doing this for a long time. So how are we going to solve the all things to all people problem? How are we going to make libraries about adventures and reading and learning and escapism and love and passion and all those wonderful things? Right? Because if we keep doing that, then what happens is we as librarians have to be tax experts and reading experts and early childhood experts and this expert and that expert. Right? If we keep looking at doing what the community wants, how do we do it all? And how do we not lose our identity in doing that? All right, so that's what I want to start talking about. So I, first of all, think that we in libraries need to give ourselves a hell of a lot of credit. Because in the past 20 years, we have made an amazing conceptual, mental change, paradigm shift, sea change, use whatever word you want, around the notion of collections. Right? So this isn't the library 2.0, all that stuff that Michael was talking about. Yes, you know, what's core in here? Fundamental, basic, good old-fashioned cataloging, mark record transformation. And it goes like this. Think about what we had in the collections, books. And then we had journals and subscriptions. And then eventually we changed it so we allowed paperback books in our collection. And that was very exciting. And then we made that wonderful leap to VHS tapes. Thank God we made that leap, right? But something happened when we moved online. It started with CD-ROMs. It actually started with this. Remember CD-ROM towers? You have to go check out the database you want and load the CD. And then we had 10 disk changers that we could work with. And like the publishers would take the book and charge you 500,000 times more for the CD, et cetera. When we adopted that, when we embraced those CDs and those electronic databases and later through the web interface, we made a fundamental change in our mental models of what a library collection was. It went from things that we owned, things that we selected, things that we organized, shelved, whatever, to suddenly we moved to things that were licensed, things that we didn't own, things that were organized by a third party, and things that we had no selection involvement in whatsoever. I mean, think about it. When you bought the CD-ROMs, or today when you go search Elsevier database, It's full of things that you have no idea what's there. You have no idea about its quality. You have no idea about its provenance. You have no idea about its accuracy. But yet we have in our world changed collections and libraries from stuff we own and warehouse to stuff we provide access to. We need to give ourselves credit for that major, massive shift, because it was. And I would argue that we still talk about making another major mental shift, which is into this community engagement, community as collection. It's time to make that shift. And there are perils to doing it. But this is how it goes. While we've made this shift in terms of our collections, I would argue we have not made these shifts yet in terms of our services and our programming, right? So what we seek to do is we seek then to serve, right? So we know how it used to be. We had people had a question, they came up to a desk, we answered, it walked away. We got really excited and we put a phone there, got really, really crazy and we allowed them to email us, and then, oh my God, SMS messaging. Clearly the apocalypse is upon us because librarians are tweeting reference questions, right? What I want you to do now, Twitter again, ready? What I want you to do now is I want you to tweet for me services other than traditional reference services that you have either read about, talked about in your library, or implemented recently. Baking pan collections, makerspaces. Give me some tweets of some services that we now provide to our communities that maybe 20 years ago we didn't. Gaming, circulating science kits. This is fun. Chat reference, checking out e-devices, seed libraries, right? I'll wait for a few more. By the way, if you ever community-focused, circulating telescopes, computer classes, famous studies of teachers in front of classrooms, I think I might have told you this before, they found out what you can do to increase interactivity. The answer was wait. That most teachers in front of a group will ask a question and wait for less than 10 seconds for an answer, and people take at least 30 seconds to formulate a response. So we have to be aware of uncomfortable silences. Little bit boxes, community weight loss support. Oh, thank God, I need that. All right, play spaces, one-on-one tech help. Right, so we've done it, Dave. We've made the change. Life is good, except we actually haven't done it yet. Because what this tweet was and what I get a lot of feedback on is as we do wireless printing and knitting groups and whatever, we see that librarians are being stretched and pulled apart. That our service staff is suddenly, I went to library school and now I'm into knitting. I went to library school and they didn't teach me anything about Lego walls and 3D printing, and now I gotta learn this and now I gotta learn that. How do I keep up with this? And we see that it's not only we doing it to ourselves, marketing and bike races and rainbow looming. I have one of those, right? It's not just that. We see that particularly in public libraries, but you see this in school libraries and all types of libraries, the communities that we have served and the services and the network of support that we provide to our communities is thinning out around us as well. In other words, at the same time that we're adding new cool services like these, what's happening is the IRS is withdrawing their phone support. This year, they didn't print enough forms to provide to libraries, right? So we became printers. Right? At the same time, social services is cutting back the people that are outside of the major urban areas, and so suddenly social work is showing up at our door. Right? We see all types of services in the public sphere are beginning to recede. What they're doing is they're taking their intermediated human services, throwing up a web page, and stepping back and going, if you have a problem, go to the web page. And so we're literally in a situation where someone who has no computer skills and needs paper tax forms is being told by the IRS to go online to get the paper forms because they can't go online. And who's left picking up the slack? Public libraries. And you say, oh yes, well that's a public library. But if you're an academic librarian, we see the idea that suddenly we're working on lots of freshman orientation, but things are falling through the cracks, like, well, who's teaching them about food service and how, what's a bursar and all these kinds of things. And so we're seeing this idea that suddenly libraries are stepping in to do things like MOOCs, do things like flipped classroom, doing things like resources, and they're being pulled apart as well. School libraries with the focus on Common Core and standards, all the enrichment activity, all the inquiry-driven instruction is happening in the library, and so librarians are picking up the slack because they have kids that are desperate for going beyond what the 5.3 standard is, and the libraries are the only necessary slack in their communities to do it. So we're being pulled apart. We're being all things to all people. Not only are we being all things to all people, is how do we respond to this? Well, that's no problem. Librarians will become social workers. Librarians will become scientists. Librarians will become tax experts. We'll go to professional development. We'll watch webinars, and we'll keep training librarians. I'm speaking about public libraries and STEM education. And the answer is not to turn librarians into STEM educators, right? They said, oh, librarians will offer this. So back to the fresh produce group with the exchange, right? The step that we're taking with the fresh produce is great. So the idea is that you can share programming among libraries. I may not get, but for the folks out there. So that you can shadow people, so that you could put on that. You can drag librarians in to repeat the project, or you can document them and share the documentation of them. Well, in STEM programming, I hate to say this, but if you look at the backgrounds of most librarians, there's a lot of English and humanities degrees, right? And so those few people who have STEM backgrounds or STEM interest and become STEM folks, they become a rather rare commodity. And so the number of services that we can offer and programs around STEM becomes limited to the librarians who have that expertise. And the solution isn't to turn every librarian into a STEM expert. You know, I know why? Because at the same time, we're trying to teach them to be tax experts and reading experts and 3D printer experts and Loom experts and what, right? It's just, we can't do it. We tried. This, our answer, by the way, is yes, we can. We have books on that topic. Because our collections, right? And so one of the questions that I often get is, why should libraries be doing this? My God, librarians have no expertise in STEM. Yeah, so they shouldn't buy books on science either. We don't ask that about our collections. We never go into a collection of a public library, an academic library, going, do you know what's in all of these books and are you experts in them all? No. We don't see that as a problem. And yet when we talk about our programming, no, we must be experts in this topic. So what's the solution for this? What's the crazy nature? The paradigm shift we have not made is that we look at service as a wall. With our collections, we created a porous collection, meaning we allowed lots and lots of different kinds of input and feedback in that collection. Suddenly, we were allowing books in and videos in and digitized resources and online databases and journal articles and blog sites and all this. We opened up the collection to the community and said, we are going to be pretty damn promiscuous in what we allow in there. But in our service side, which we've always looked as being community-facing and flexible, what have we done? We've said, no, we're the librarians. We serve you. The most arrogant question a librarian can ask of their community member, how can I help you? You sit there and go, that doesn't sound really arrogant. Sounds like a good question. How can I help you implies, one, you can't necessarily help me, and two, I can help you. I spent a time at an Ivy League university for a semester, and it happens to be in the Northeast and Cambridge, Massachusetts. And people asked, oh, Dave, those Ivy Leaguers, they must have been a little arrogant. I said they were the most wonderful, warm people you could imagine. They let the buildings be arrogant for them, right? Right. So they don't need to say, hi, I'm at Harvard. It's just like, oh, yes, that building, that's where we keep the billion-dollar endowment. And over, you know, they don't have to spend the time. But where it shows up is when you go to them and say, hey, I have an idea. Can we try this? And they're like, no, really, we're here for you. Do you want me to give a speech? No. We're really, this is an experience where you can learn. In other words, there's nothing that I could do for them. So instead of saying, how can I help you? The question is, what are you passionate about? Because what they're passionate about is maybe I can help them, but maybe I'm also going to learn a lot about this topic. Because we know a good reference interview is a two-way learning street. It's the idea of, what question do you have? Oh, can you tell me a little bit about it? No, right? So we're learning together. So in truth, it's not how can I help you, it's how can we work together on this topic. But we have this wall of service. And what that means is either we as librarians need to know everything, which doesn't work, or we do what we see a lot in academic libraries, no problem, we will hire a PhD in physics, we'll bring in a social worker, we'll bring in, and we begin bringing non-librarians into the mix. Now, there's nothing wrong with non-librarians working in libraries. I'm actually a big fan of non-librarians working in, and I have a very broad definition of librarian to begin with. But the problem is when we bring them in, we treat them like non-librarians, right? It's like, oh, it's great to have a social worker. Yay. I'll send all my problems to you, right? And we don't enculturate them. We don't spend time to go, by the way, did you know privacy is important? By the way, do you know that freedom of information is really important? Have you ever thought about the ethics of what we're doing? Have you ever thought about the service that we've done? So we bring them in and they become stovepipes in our organizations. We see this, by the way, in the iSchool, being a little self-reflective, the iSchool movement, where we moved from library science programs and then we started saying, oh, we'll bring in people in communications and technology. And we brought them in and they all started saying, well, great, we're all in the technology and information business. It works well. We just sort of forgot that we have these values that we're part of too. It's not just can I do it? It's should I do it? And so over time, that's led to this rift where the LIS programs sit over in the stovepipe and we become the service people, the nice people, and the values people. And over on this side, they're the technology and engineering people. But the problem is to be of service, you need technology and engineering. And to do good technology and engineering, you need values. We need to enculturate folks. So either we bring in people and stovepipe it, or we end up with, now what's the difference between a community center and a library? I mean, you're doing 3D printing, and you're doing knitting and weaving, and why is that a library? What's going on? So this wall becomes a division between us. So what is the solution, right? We end up with a diffuse concept of what a library is. I know you can't see the slides for me. We become jack of all trades, master of none. By the way, the failure future apocalyptic scenario for the public library is not that we go away because people think we're obsolete. It's because we start doing so many things that we start doing them poorly and people begin holding us up as an example of failed government. You think that the Tea Partiers are pissed off at their taxes now? Wait till they sit there and go, what am I paying for? I'm paying for games, I'm paying for Minecraft, I'm paying for looms, and they don't even do it well. It's not going to work. So what's the solution to this? The solution to this is for us to understand that that community is our collection. And just like we can refer people to books and we can collect on multiple topics, we do it with our communities as well. You want to teach STEM education? Find a professor. You want to teach STEM education? Find an engineer. And what's great about this is if you find a local engineer, you're building a network and weaving a community together, so the next day when they have an additional question, they have people to go back and forth and back to, et cetera. So what I want to do is I want to do a little demonstration. So welcome. We're going to do a little work here. So what I want you to do out in the States and here is I want you to stand up, more interaction. Stand up. And I want you to find a partner. So, find a partner. All right? Okay. Look at your partner. I want one of you, by the way, I'm stealing this from a really brilliant mediator called Cheryl Gould, which I hope we can get in. So this is her task, but I want to give her credit. I want one of you in the team to do your best impersonation of an apple, and one of you to do the best impersonation of a banana. Banana, apple. Come on, hands up, hands around. I need one apple and one banana. One of you is an apple, one of you is a banana. All right? Remember whether you're a banana or an apple. Okay. All right, you can put your hands down. Now, Now we have an A and a B, huh? A and a B. For 2 minutes, I want your apples. I want you to tell your bananas. All right, so stick with me for the whole thing. Apples, tell your bananas two things you're passionate about. Can't be work-related. Gardening. I love science fiction movies. I love whatever it is. Nope. What's your interest? Caterpillars and avoiding. Right? No. The apple banana thing was just to get you A's and B's. All right. So, tell your partner two things you're interested in. Your partner will pick one. For 2 minutes, uninterrupted, you will tell that partner everything you know and love about that topic, right? So I say, I'm interested in sci-fi and gardening, and you say, tell me about sci-fi. For 2 minutes, I'm going to talk about science fiction, okay? All right, ready? Give your partner your two topics and pick one. All right? All right, 2 minutes. Talk about it for 2 minutes. I want you now to tweet out some of those topics that you talked about. Just give us a sample of some of the topics you talked about. Oh, move mouse, Dave, move mouse. I was once in a fabulous lecture with a professor and it was one of those automatic light things. And she got so into her lecture, she forgot to move, and so the lights would go out on us every so often. So, Transformers, young adult literature, troubleshooting and sock, okay? Golf and dogs, Eggs Benedict pork brunch restaurants in Chicago, all right. Doctor Who, love it. Yay! Yarn arts, puppets, parakeets. Yarn arts, reality shows, home remodeling and decor. Vatican Library to read ancient church writings. Yes. I'll be there in 2 weeks. I'll let you know how it is. Bears, carpentry, goddaughter, graphic novels. So, what I want you to think about, and you're welcome to continue to put them up there. I did. He died with her, didn't he?
Yes.
Oh. Yes, he died in, yes. Eleanor discovered very quickly where he was. Yes. All right. What I want you to think about for a moment is reflect, how hard was it for you to identify a topic that you could talk about for 2 minutes? Not hard at all, right? We have these passions amongst ourselves, right? And look at the variety that we're talking about, right? Now, the question then becomes, how can we use this passion? Because I think it was Jamie LaRue said, everyone wants to write a book. Everyone has these passions. One of the things, we got into a brief back and forth about the word consumer and user at some point. When we look at our communities as people to be served, as separate from us, as needing our help, we totally miss that community is a rich stew of expertise, passion, and interest that we can unleash and utilize within us. If we make our services as porous as our collections have become, imagine we can begin to serve people on many different topics where we don't have to become the expert. Now, there are lots of issues, and that's where we're headed next. So I know that Michael talked about? Right? I know someone's waiting to do this, so stick with me. We'll get there. Now what I would like you to do is I want you to get into groups again, and organic, 4 to 5 people you're sitting next to, don't worry about it. There's no apples or bananas, but wait for me a moment. We are going to, and I'm going to, 5 minutes, because, you know, we got time. 5 minutes, I want you to identify one of the topics, so So one of the topics you talked about, just pick one randomly. Don't spend a lot of time on it. Just pick one. And I want you to think about how libraries could build a program to support the person who had that topic. So let me be real clear on this. How you could support the person with that topic, not how you could do a program on X, how you could use this person in a program about X. So for example, gardening. Gardening, right? So I come in, I say I have a passion about gardening. The question isn't, oh, we have books on gardening and we could do a seed library and all of this stuff, right? Suddenly what we say is that's a question, we're gonna serve them because we're gonna help them. Back to the wall, back to us serving them. Different. All right, gardening. Well, I could talk about gardening. I've got friends who are gardeners, and I could see bringing those friends in, but I would need help. So what are some of the things that libraries could do just sort of to prime this conversation? We could provide space, right? We could provide, and this is a radical idea, organizational skills. All that time that we spend in committees and meetings, believe it or not, that's a skill. That if we can provide logistics, if we can provide calendaring, if we can provide what do they need to do it, the supplies, etc. So find a group, pick one topic, and brainstorm a service around the person with that topic. All right? Don't worry, it's free form. There are no wrong answers. All right? Go. Find a group. All right. Start tweeting out some of these ideas. Start tweeting out some of the ways we can incorporate these community experts into our programming. Travel. Set up a mock model UN. I know, it's 5 minutes and 140 characters. Come on. Share your family history. My grandfather's brother's best friend's father shot the man who shot Billy Kidd. Just congratulations on typing that out. Thank you.
All 140 characters.
Yeah. Hiking club. There was a library. It was on the middle of a developed land, and the developer was in court all the time, so they couldn't actually build the houses. But they agreed to sit there and do paths and hiking trails, and so the library checked out hiking trails. Create tabletop gaming groups, 20 and 30-something fellow nerds, bike repair at the library, movie programs, including marathons and dances. Beer tasting, textiles. Tap into clubs at the university programs for experts to lead the discussions. What to see in an hour if you go to X? Oral history of Chicago hardcore. All right. Creative writing. Lead a youth creative writing group. And luckily, most people are tweeting. All right. Having cooking expos with staff, petting zoos and video games, library Comic-Con. All right? Now, in the space of 15 minutes, with a group with diverse backgrounds, but all librarians, we have identified a huge pool of expertise, and we've started brainstorming how we could build programs around it. Imagine what you could do. Which one? Oh, yeah. Imagine what you can do with a community full of lawyers and dancers and kids and Lego builders and whatever. Now, here's the next part of the question, Rich, which is, okay, Dave, you've just made the library is all things to all people even worse, right? What's the difference if we do things like rowboat races at the library? Why is that a library program? If you do things like connecting game designers with the people, what they want to do, why should that happen at the library? Why should we do found materials races. Why should we do, why is that a library? By the way, academic libraries, you say, oh, that's all public stuff. Are you kidding me? Like, you don't have students and professors and staff members with expertise and ideas? I was at Cornell and they talked about kayaking clubs, right? These are, that we have students, you know, from 18 years old to 80 years old that need to do things after they're done studying. So this isn't just about what we can do in a public or a school library. Workshops about, all right, hip hop and Zumba on the grounds. I had one library that did story time yoga, right? So they did yoga, but then they invented poses like Angry Monster and, you know, Sleeping Cat and things, right? But here's where we make a switch. Which is, okay, Dave, I get it. We could do all this stuff with the community orientation, but here are the number one issues. How the hell do I know this person knows anything about this topic? They come in here and they say they want to do, you know, Chicago history. How do I know they're not a loon? How do I know that they're not crazy? A lot of this is we get people who do, we know are great, but they don't want to stand up in front of a crowd. Or they don't want to have to be here every Thursday. Or what happens if we do this and no one shows up? Is this the first library program you've ever put on where no one's ever shown up? Better communities through chickens. For God's sake, save the salmon. All right. Love all these, but what about liability? What about management? Absolutely. Guess what? Now we talk about why this is a library activity, not just something random. We have institutions. We have space. We have codes. We have lots of things that we have to worry about. That's true because it's meant for civic and community safety as well as engagement. But why is it at a library? Because it's not just an activity. What is the focus and core of a librarian supposed to be doing? Anyone remember our mission? The mission of a librarian, and therefore the institutions they build called libraries, is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in our communities. So it's not just a matter of pure escapism, though people participating may do it as an escape. We do it with an eye towards learning. Because learning is at the core of every type of library. So while people come in, we don't necessarily have to give them a test at the end and say, did they pass this? Did they get this? We do have to think about, what are our outcomes? What should people be able to do based on this? What are the learning expectations? How can we make sure that this is a curriculum that has pace within it? The other thing is, as librarians, and this goes to that point about, well, how do we convince people to do this at our library because they're all fuddy-duddies and they just look at books and materials? Guess what? What we just did is collection development. Just like you look at a book or a book series or a journal or a database and you go through an evaluative process to find out, is it useful within your community? Does it complete our collection? Does it meet needs? How would we describe it? How would people find it? Yes, metadata, RDA, MARC, all that stuff. We need to apply those exact same skills to our community. We know that we have materials in our libraries that are crap. But rarely did we ever purchase them because they were crap, right? So you're going to select and you're going to do your best, and you know what? Someone's going to get up and just that program's going to fail miserably. Oh, it's never happened before. We have materials that don't circulate. It's the same thing. The question doesn't become, oh God, why did you do that? The question is, Eli Nyberger told us way back in the first session, is how could we do that better the next time? And because the community member's part of it, right? So the gardening expert, we brought the gardening expert in and no one showed up. Does that gardening expert become pissed off because you wasted their time? No, they were part of the planning process. They have part of the responsibility. And then you sit down and say, how could we do this better differently in the future? This turns into things like telescope kits and all this other stuff. You don't do these things because they're cool and flashy. We definitely don't do these things because the library down the road did these things. If you plan innovative services by being the second to do anything, it's not an innovation plan. We do this because it's part and core of what our library does, and it's core to what we as librarians do, which is about knowledge creation. And guess what? We figured out, you know what people learn really well from? Books. For centuries and centuries, and today and in the future, people learn from books. Absolutely. You know what else? They learn from things that aren't books. They learn from 3D printers, and they learn how to fish with fishing poles. They learn how to do public speaking by getting up and speaking. If we're in the learning business, we are not in the learning through books business. We are in the learning business. And the tools we bring and the tools we have at our disposal, technology tools, traditional tools, physical spaces, community trust, all of those tools are to accomplish that purpose. So why not these? What does our community need to learn? And so the answer to how do we convince people to do this is we have them recognize that this is what we've always been doing. We're doing collection development. Catalogers should be part of this process as well as the reference librarians. Youth services librarians should be sitting right next to the people who do system design to do this activity, because all of them have something to contribute. All of them are part of it. This is core librarianship. Jamie LaRue, I mentioned in the introduction, he pushes and develops something called community reference. He takes librarians and he says, you go sit in the Chamber of Commerce. And the librarians, when Peter Bloomberg tried to do this in Salt Lake City, his librarians went, why? What am I going to do? I'm going to go sit in the Arts Council. Why? I'm going to go sit at the school board meeting. Why? Well, that's not librarianship. What am I supposed to do when I get there? He goes, have you ever done a reference interview? No. Yes. What do you do with a reference interview? Well, we listen, and we have a conversation, and once we feel we have something to contribute, we respond. So go to the board meeting, listen for a year, for multiple sessions, and when you have something to contribute, contribute. That contribution, that's reference. So we're doing it out in the world. Turns out that works really well. I've met many a librarian who now actually are the presidents of chambers of commerce because they started in that process, right? Not just sitting, they become part of it. There are committees, Jamie will tell you the story, where the Chamber of Commerce committee wouldn't meet until the librarian showed up because then they knew they could get something done, right? And it's another part, which is I want you to go sit in Chamber of Commerce, but then I want you to go to the Arts Council. Why? Because you're going to do collection development. So when the question comes up about, hey, I've got a great idea, why don't we do a human library project? You can say, you know what, the museum that I was just sat in their meeting yesterday, they're doing a human library project. Let's connect them. That's core basic librarianship. So the strategy, the tactic, I should be sure, the tactic is, we always did this. This is basic librarianship. So you get the most fuddy-duddy person in the world and they say, why should we do baking pan collections? You go, no. We're expanding our collection. Could you help me with the Mark record for a baking pan? Because then they go, oh, Mark record, right? And you say, we're going to do cooking. And they say, oh, no, you can't do cooking. We don't have a license. Guess what? I was just sitting in at their grocery store the other day. They do. Maybe we'll do the program in the grocery store. Oh, we couldn't, and maybe we'll digitize it and put it up. Oh, we can't digitize things and put it up. Oh, yeah? I was talking with a lawyer as part of the Chamber of Commerce, and he's willing to take a look at the release form. That's how you do it. It's not you against the world. And it's not you, the crazy eye leader that goes back and says, I just found out there's a 3D printer. Let's try it. First of all, while you're here, try it, play, have a great time. That's what craziness is all about. What librarianship, why any profession should be about, is frantic play and discovery followed by serious implementation and impact. And the way we do impact is not radically different. We all know, I've had conversations with like four folks here in Illinois, and I've talked to Pope elsewhere, this session that goes with something like, you know what, gate counts are stupid. Counting the number of people walking to our building no longer expresses what we do. Uh-huh. Guess what? Librarians have this thing where we talk about bibliometrics, where we talk about utilization and how materials connect. We know about how to assess, evaluate, add quantitative data where it's available. Let's turn it on ourselves. How many people use the human book in the human library? So how, going back to the brief outline, and then we'll go from there, where we talked about, the tweet said, how do we have to be to all people? The answer is, we are of the people, but we don't do everything the people want. We do the things that are coordinated and aligned with our mission of learning, and we do them with a strong sense of quality control that librarians have always been. And by the way, if you believe that librarians are involved in quality control or have an interest in quality, high quality, you cannot be unbiased. You have to have a vision of what is quality, what is better, where we're going. And so what I'm telling you is you've always done it. Now you do it with people and service and connect them. And if you get someone who says, I really want to talk about the Civil War, and they come up to you and they talk like this, I really want to talk about the Civil War. And you're sitting there going, you're going to have to talk louder about the Civil War. And they go, okay, how about this? Then what you do in your mind is you say, maybe you doing a lecture is not the way to do it. Maybe we can start a discussion group. Maybe we can put together a kit. Maybe you can help us do a display. Maybe you can help us do, they had early literacy. I tell these stories. My point of all of this is that if you come to iLead and you hear the big heads, and we all get up here and we all tell you, oh, it's about the community, me, community, and try something different. And every example we throw at you, it's kind of like, I get really annoyed by the annotated bibliography as future casting. You know, it's like, well, this person said this, and this person said this, and we just present you with lots of examples, baking pan collections, and this, and this, and this. That's the easy part. Coming up with cool ideas, you guys are brilliant at it. Turning it into something that changes your community for the better, turning it into something where core librarianship is there, and back to that other question about hiring more librarians and librarians sit here, of course you need librarians to do this. Or else it's just a room and people having fun, which is great, but that's not a library. What makes it a library isn't the books, and it isn't the stacks, and it isn't the word library. It's you folks doing your job. It's you folks doing your job on a porous collection that includes databases and materials and books and people and lawyers and students and genius ideas and fishing poles and rods. Not because that's the cool thing to do, but that's because that's the world we live in, and now we as librarians who've always wanted to embrace informal learning and help our communities through learning can do it with a radical different tool set. We can do it through portable video systems that we send out that not only can we capture librarians doing 10-second learning, we can capture the whole community doing 10-second learning episodes. Right? Not only can we do it by taking hotspots out and saying, hey, we're a hotspot, but going out and doing programming around it, signing up for library cards, helping organize Minecraft. And we don't do Minecraft because it's cool and it'll get the kids in the door. We do it because they're learning fundamentals of interaction, social interaction cues. They're learning technology literacy skills, that, right? Now, does a kid come in and say, oh, goody, right? There's a great term in gamification. It's called chocolate-covered broccoli, right? Do we do it by a kid coming in and saying, all right, son, prepare to do Minecraft. There will be a test when you're done. Right? We don't do that, but we know what's happening is learning. And we watch it, and we observe it, and we figure out. And we as librarians need to figure out how to quantify it. And the way we sell it is we don't sell it as, hey, it's new and it's hip, or hey, it's something to get people in. Hey, it's the fad of the day. We do it by saying, this is what we've always done. If you bring in a new Elsevier database, and I bring in a knitter, we've done the same thing. It's still collection development. And so how do we change within this? We must first change ourselves. So what I would like you to think about for a moment is I want to do one more thing, tweetable. We started with libraries and books, and I asked you what you thought about with books. I now want you to tweet what word you associate with library. Librarians. I like that one. Sanctuary. Learning. Freedom. Community, passion, engagement. Interaction, unstoppable. Haven. Keep them coming. Now. Home. We are sexy. Well, you are. All right. How do we get our communities to do the same thing? And the answer is not by serving them well. The answer is not by looking at them as deficits that we can help. The answer is by asking them what their passion is and joining into their passion. The answer is not to serve a community, but to be a community. The answer as a librarian is not to sort and to fixate and to pick a winner in the medium war. The answer is to liberate and provide freedom and to allow our communities to look in their past and future and sharing. Libraries aren't doomed. Libraries aren't headed for the dustbin of history because librarians are more vital than ever. And it's not simply me saying that. And it's not simply a slogan we take out. It's because we're directly connected to the core of our communities. And when we reflect the community and it becomes so integral to them that to diminish the library is to diminish themselves because they see themselves, they own that service, they own that collection, they are the library, that's when we have succeeded, that's when we have a future. And ultimately, all of this play, which is fabulous, should be leading you to that question. That's, thank you very much. Ta-da. All right, we have time for questions, and I'm only going to answer them off the Twitter stream. Sheldon Cooper. I don't understand that question. How do I convince my colleagues that programming is collection development of the community resource? I think part of it starts with you actually demonstrating it is and including them in that process. Simple, simple thing. There is a community group that wanted to put a calendar together. And so everyone says, we're going to do a community calendar, and everyone does their own community calendar. And the library came in and said, well, we can do this. And because they sat on all these boards, they said, oh, the library will do it. Community calendar involves who has access to add the community calendar? What is the metadata associated with that event? How does that metadata show up? By turning it into a process where you start with the people's comfortable processes and build them in, it will make it easier. We want more. I can talk. So the short answer is everything's going to be different. One, language use. In the Web 2.0 world, it was all about, it's new, it's brand new, it's cool, we got to do it because it's new. The way I have found moving organizations is not to start with, it's new, it's brand new. It's to say, it's old, it's traditional, we're moving it ahead, we're refreshing it. I need your expertise, traditional person who never opens the door, to help us transition in this process. So you bring them from where they are, you allow them to be expert in the process, and you take them to where you want to go. When are you coming to Maine? As soon as I can, because the Clam Shack is open in Kennebunk. All right. Oh, so my father... We got time. The short answer is we've been playing with the Oculus Rift here in Illinois, and so I was joking the fact that in 19 1990, I was the first director of the virtual reality lab at Syracuse. So I was ahead of our time. And we used like the Power Glove from the Nintendo days. And the exact same thing about you'll be able to wander around and see dinosaurs is that someone even mentioned the Oculus Rift. If you go back and look in 1990 VR, you will find people that look just about exactly the same. So I was telling my, you know, I was a young undergraduate, and I went to my father, and I said, Dad, I'm doing this. He goes, great, I'm going to call you Virtual Dave from now on. So my, if you ever see that, it's because my father called me Virtual Dave. And so you don't want to be VD. So that's where the VRD comes. And yes, the Virtual Reference Desk project I ran a couple of years ago, I named after myself, but just no one knew it. Okay. Shouldn't we be concerned that we have duplicating service already available in the community? Absolutely. And once again, I said people, but just talk about organizations as well. The idea of going, the idea of having community reference and this collection development is you say, you know, they're doing a biking project in this. How can we be a part of it? I keep picking on the hotspot project, but the idea that I heard you guys are going to soccer games. That's a chance to talk to the people who put together the soccer tournaments and see what else you can connect to. So just like you're saying, yes, the library doesn't, it doesn't have to be in the library, and it doesn't have to be a library first effort. It has to be a library connected effort, because that's, as librarian, our major skill, which is facilitation, weaving these things together. Go ahead, Beck. So to repeat for the states, Beck, and I always make an exception for Beck, said working with these organizations, they may not have knowledge as either their primary goal or even have considered it. And by having the library part, we can make that our contribution, which is to make sure that learning is available. Yeah. You did? Oh, God.
Cut the connection.
I'm willing to try it. All right, hold on. I shouldn't do this, I apologize, but even I'm curious what it is. Wake up. That is not me.
Comb the hair, Dave, comb the hair.
I'm sorry, that literally is not me, but... I wish I was ever that skinny. I really do. All right, where are we? Oh, wrong one. I have like 3,000 different tweets going. How do you define outreach versus community engagement? I think the idea is, I've said many libraries where they have the community engagement librarian. I think that is the wrong idea. I think every librarian is a community engagement librarian. So the idea of, I don't think you have to even define it that way. I go back to the idea of, as librarians, we're building services and collections, and this is what we've always done, and so we do it across. Does it make sense to have someone who can do that? Yes, absolutely. Ferguson tells the story. Baltimore tells the story. All of these folks in times of crisis, and we heard Jamie talk about times of crisis, libraries are there to charge, et cetera. That only happens in all of those cases, Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, Ferguson, and Baltimore. All of those services that were quickly brought to a community happened because the library already had in place and maintained connections to other community organizations. In Ferguson, when they closed the schools and kids couldn't get their free and reduced lunches, it wasn't like they had to go find a food pantry service. The people who delivered free and reduced lunches throughout the summer were already at the library. They just had to extend it for a week. So the idea, though, is we look at not only collection development, but collection maintenance. The dust, the slip covers, the is it here? Do we do inventory control? Guess what? Your community needs collection maintenance as well. Is this still a viable connection? Does it still make sense? Does it still work to partner? Yay. Check out Maine Science Community, absolutely. All right, other questions besides bobbleheading? Right, and I think the answer is it's all community engagement. How do we speak? How do you speak so eloquently and linearly without notes or PowerPoints? Because I love the sound of my own voice. No, actually, I'm going to jump off that one. All right. I was talking to some people last night at the hotel. This is a personal pet peeve that has nothing to do with the talk I just gave, so hold on a moment. Librarians, when we do collection development, it's all about connections. We've been doing a lot of wrong collection development when we do cataloging, because we do the front pieces of books. But we all know the interesting part is not the title and the author, it's how it connects to other books, how what it cites, what it uses, what it influenced. Right? I find Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone not as helpful as if I knew it was part of a series. Right? Or I find out that Harry Potter, Sorcerer's Stone was very influenced by so-and-so, and right, the whole notion of connections. So we talk about connections. We need to think in connections. And one of my favorite games is, and we'll try it here, I want someone to give me a noun. Proper noun or regular noun? I'm sorry, I'm going to... Proper noun or regular noun? Cake. All right. Another proper noun or regular noun. Taco. Cake and taco. Everything is related. How can we relate cake to taco? Now this is right. So let's think about it. What do we got?
Carbs.
Carbs. There you go. Both layered. We eat them. Ooh. but what's so it's a capybara? All right, I don't know what a capybara is, I admit it. Oh, okay. And noun. All right, it is one. All right. If we create these interesting connections, what's interesting as you get into it, so the example I always gave was in one class I had Margaret Thatcher and Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so I said, so I know some of you heard this already, but the idea is Kentucky Fried Chicken was Colonel Sanders. Colonel is a military rank. Britain has a military that was commanded by Margaret Thatcher. Someone said, all wrong. I said, what do you mean all wrong? They go, Kentucky Fried Chicken is junk food that will get you fat if you eat too much, which is the same as soft ice cream, and soft ice cream was developed at a chemical process where Margaret Thatcher was a chemist. Before she was a chemist. Now, that kind of connection is really cool. And what's interesting is when you talk about cake and tacos better warm, and someone else goes, oh no, you gotta have cold and a freezer. Those connections can also be very personal. Very, very personal. And in the old days when all we had were cards and stacks and we had to put things in one place and one arrangement, we couldn't deal with that. But now when we have social systems and software, we can build these different connections all the time. You can make a taco cake. That's good to know. So my point of that is connections. All right, this is going to quickly go in the wrong way, isn't it?
Oh no.
All right, so time is up. Thank you very, very much. I unfortunately have to go catch a plane, so I won't be here for the end. But I will see you all in October, and we can continue these conversations. Thank you in the States for participating.